Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's time to let Cuban Americans see their mothers and their fathers, their sisters and their brothers. It's time to let Cuban American money make their families less dependent on the Castro regime.
Well, yesterday the White House announced that it is abandoning long-standing restrictions on family travel, remittances and gifts to Cuba. The Obama administration says it'll also take steps to open up telecommunications with the island, a significant shift in policy that fulfills a promise, as you just heard, that the president made during the campaign. The announcement comes on the eve of President Obama's trip this week to Trinidad and Tobago for the Summit of the Americas, which is a venue where most governments have been calling on changes in Washington's policies towards Cuba for some time now. Meanwhile, some lawmakers are urging the administration to go even further. Is this the beginning of the end of a policy cultivated during the height of the Cold War, or is it a small shift that will eventually go nowhere for political reasons, as we've seen many times in the past? We have two guests to help us shed light on it. First of all, joining us to talk about the more policy-related issues is Dr. William Leogrand, who is Dean of the School of Public Affairs at American University and author of several books, including Our Own Backyard, The U.S. and Central America. He is the co-author of a forthcoming book, Talking with Fidel, The Untold History of Dialogue Between the United States and Cuba. Dr. Leogrand, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
We're also joined by Carol Rosenberg, who's the founder and executive director of the Havana Film Festival in New York, which is celebrating its 10th year here in New York, and it's launching, I believe, on Thursday. And we'll talk a little bit about how this may play out for future film festivals here in New York. Carol Rosenberg, thanks for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
It's great to have you. First of all, I want to start with you, Dr. Leogrand. Obviously, this is at least made a lot of news, and it seems like a big shift in policy. In recent months, you've written about how not since Nixon went to China are we so close to a major policy shift vis-a-vis Cuba as we are today under the Obama administration. Is this what you were more or less referring to, or is this just a start?
Well, it's just a start. It's a very big start for Cuban Americans because, for all intents and purposes, it lifts the embargo as far as Cuban Americans are concerned. But it doesn't really do much of anything else for ordinary Americans who would like to travel to Cuba as well. They still are prohibited from doing that. And it doesn't do anything to reduce the commercial embargo on trade or investment between the United States and Cuba. And finally, it really doesn't do anything about the freeze in state-to-state relations. There are a lot of issues between Cuba and the United States where we could make some progress if we would be willing to open a dialogue. That's the other thing the president promised during the campaign, is that he would reopen a dialogue with the Cuban government. We're still waiting to see that.
Mm-hmm. But is it fair to assume that perhaps the president is doing this piecemeal, that he wants to kind of chip away at it to reduce the political impact, particularly from the supposedly conservative Cuban American communities here in New Jersey, for example, and in Miami in particular?
Well, I think it's probably true that the president wants to gauge the reaction both domestically in the United States, but also wants to gauge the reaction of the Cuban government to see if there's a response on the Cuban side that suggests that they're interested in pursuing a broader dialogue.
I just want to remind listeners that if you're tuned in the listening area here in New Jersey, New York, the metro area, give us a call if you have any response, especially Cuban Americans who are either favorable to this or perhaps not too happy about it. The number is 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. If you're in the Miami area and you're listening online, give us a call as well, 433-9692, to pipe in your comments. Maybe we can go back, because I was reading a piece that you wrote earlier this year, talking about how the situation that we see today in terms of U.S.-Cuba relations is very similar, and for Obama, a number of opportunities are opening up that previous administrations perhaps had, but didn't not coalescing at the same time. Could you talk about what some of these factors are that make it more probable that the U.S. will indeed change its course vis-a-vis Cuba? I think we lost William Leogrand. I'm not sure if he's there. I think we lost William Leo Grand.
No, I'm here.
That was strange. Okay,
there was something else jumped in on us there.
Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry about that. So you're still with us? Thank goodness.
I am still here. The first thing that's changed is the international context. The president's going to find when he goes to the summit of the Americas that Latin America, there's a broad consensus there. That the United States ought to change its policy towards Cuba. And that was the same sort of situation that Richard Nixon faced in the early 1970s. The United States was the only country that didn't recognize that the real China was mainland China. Today, the United States is the only country that doesn't recognize Cuba as the legitimate government of the island. We've got our differences with Cuba. They're real differences. They're important differences. But it would be a lot more sensible for us to have a policy of engagement with the island, which is what all of our allies in Latin America and Europe already have. So the first factor is the international one. The second is the domestic political factor. Throughout the Cold War, the early years of the Cold War, both Democrats and Republicans kept a hard line towards communist China because of the fear of what was called the China lobby. The belief was that if you tried to open towards China, that would be a domestic political disaster. Well, obviously, the strength of Cuban-American lobbies over the last two decades have created the same kind of domestic political fear. But today, the Cuban-American community has changed dramatically. If you look at the polling results, if you look at the reaction of the Cuban-American National Foundation to the president's actions, they've supported it. So there's a change in the Cuban-American community that recognizes that engagement is a better strategy than isolation.
I want to go into that a little further, and indeed we have a caller from Gutenberg, New Jersey, Maria, calling in, who's, I believe, a Cuban-American. Maria, thanks for calling. Your thoughts about this.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm Cuban-American, and I favor the lifting of the embargo because I think that we need to call the bluff on the Castro regime.
You favor lifting the embargo.
Right. I think we need to call the bluff on the Castro brothers regime. They've used this excuse to excuse their failed economy for years. And I also think that every time the Americans go there, they need to talk to the dissidents, they need to talk to people who are have different opinions from the government, and that come back and say that Fidel Castro's eyes are those of a good old man, and all of a sudden they turn to be very nice people, and that's why we should lift the embargo.
So thank you, Maria, for that call. Comes from the heart. Maria favors lifting it for political reasons counter to the Castro regime, whereas Representatives Mario and Lincoln Diaz-Balart, Republicans of Florida, of course, Cuban-Americans, were pretty harsh about Obama's decision, calling it a serious mistake, and they said that it's unilaterally, quote, granting a concession to the dictatorship, which will provide it with hundreds of millions of dollars annually, unquote. How much support do you feel that kind of thinking still has, not only in Florida and Miami, but throughout the broader U.S. public when it comes to Cuba?
Well, you know, there was a poll done late last year among Cuban Americans in South Florida, which found for the first time that a majority of them, over 50%, 54% I believe it was, favor lifting the embargo. And over 60% favor the kind of measures that the president took yesterday, which is lifting the restrictions on Cuban American travel and remittances. So Cuban-Americans elected to Congress on the Republican ticket from South Florida, they're the hardliners, no question about it, but they represent a shrinking portion of the Cuban-American community.
We have a number of callers calling in about this issue. Let's go to George in Manhattan. Thanks for calling.
Hello.
George.
Hi.
Hello. Tell us, what's on your mind about the announcement Obama made yesterday?
Well, I was against it. I have a Cuban family. I was involved in bringing Cubans here to the United States to settle. I was willing to sponsor one, and who was a very close friend of my family. And my feeling is that when you speak to Cubans, you realize that they're really interested in us as Cubans, but they're not really concerned about the fact that the Cuban government put missiles on their shores aimed at us. And they're willing to attack us whenever they get a chance to. Here we're concerned about terrorism, and the likelihood of terrorism is much higher in Cuba than anywhere else.
George in Manhattan, thanks for your call. Last I checked, it was quite a bit time ago that development happened with the missile crisis. You argue, William Leo Grand, that if we're talking with North Korea, we're reaching out to Iran, that it's complete nonsense not to be dialoguing with the Cuban regime.
Well, I do think that. And, you know, there was an argument during the Cold War that Cuba posed an important security problem for the United States. Cuba was an ally of the Soviet Union. As the caller pointed out, during the missile crisis in 1962, the Soviets put intermediate ballistic missiles in Cuba aimed at the United States with the Cuban government's support. But with the end of the Cold War, Cuba stopped being a security threat to the United States. It's not the case that that Cuba is rife with terrorism. As a matter of fact, there's never been a terrorist attack against the United States from Cuba. The Cubans would argue, on the other hand,
absolutely,
that a lot of the things the CIA did in the 1960s in terms of attempts to assassinate their leaders, bombing of economic enterprises there, were terrorism from the other direction.
Yeah, I was just going to say that there's been plenty of evidence, a lot of documentation showing the U.S. Destabilizing role in Cuba, including, as you just pointed out, bombings and attacks that, by any stretch of the imagination could be described as terrorist attacks. But what about the changing scope? I want to go back a little bit to the U.S. policy in the region in general. Is Obama perhaps reaching out as a possible gesture also to the rest of the region that is also moving counter to the direction of U.S. control and U.S. influence, and that perhaps he's saying, well, now is the time to not only open up spaces vis-a-vis Cuba, but also other countries in the region like Venezuela and some of the other countries that have moved to the left in recent years?
No question that this initiative on Cuba is part of the president's broader conception of wanting to change our relationship with Latin America. Throughout the campaign, he talked about the need to have a new relationship with the hemisphere and the way in which historically we've ignored the hemisphere until there's a crisis. The summit coming up is his opportunity to really articulate exactly what his vision is for this new relationship. And because the issue of Cuba is such a symbolic one for Latin America, I think he's taken these measures in anticipation of the summit in the hopes that it will pave the way for a good meeting with other heads of state.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, the other issue, the other side of the equation, obviously, is Cuba itself. What has been the response from the Cuban government, Raul Castro and his government? To the latest gesture.
I haven't seen a reaction yet. The big question is going to be whether or not the Cuban government is willing to allow its own telecommunications companies to take advantage of the president's decision to let U.S. telecommunication companies do business on the island, to open up cell phone coverage, to open up internet access, and to open up better landline telephone connections between the two countries. It's very tough to communicate with Cuba, and the president's decision yesterday would enable us to really modernize the communications infrastructure and would allow ordinary people on the two sides of the Florida Strait to communicate with one another in a much more normal and regular way.
Mm-hmm.
But that requires the cooperation of the Cuban government, and it will be interesting to see if the Cuban government responds positively to this initiative.
Right. Obviously, the U.S. telecommunication companies are chomping at the bit to get in there, and obviously it's wait and see to look at the reaction that perhaps the Cuban government has to this. One of the it's clear that Raul Castro does, in a number of settings, does seem to be more open to this kind of thing. So we'll have to see what his response is to that. We're speaking to Dr. William Leo Grand, who is the Dean of the School of Public Affairs at American University. He's the co-author of a forthcoming book, Talking with Fidel, The Untold History of Dialogue Between the U.S. and Cuba. I wanted to bring on Carol Rosenberg, who's the founder and executive director of the Havana Film Festival in New York. She's also a longtime supporter of Cuban culture and affairs with interchanges and exchanges between the U.S. and Cuba. She's the president of the American Friends of the Louvre Ludwig Foundation of Cuba, and that organization is perhaps one of the people behind, one of the organizations behind the Havana Film Festival. Carol Rosenberg, how does this latest announcement yesterday perhaps not change the landscape of this week's festival, which is opening in New York, but future endeavors, as you've been involved in this for so many years?
Well, Mario, I must say that it has helped, because we did get a visa for Enrique Molina. And that's something that we haven't been able to do for a number of years. The American government wasn't issuing visas to the filmmakers in Havana. And this year, we are very excited to have Enrique with us. We will have some other filmmakers actors, from Havana, but they are coming on passports that are not Cuban. We will have Jorge Perugaria with us. It'll be the second time he's been with us, and he has a Spanish passport, although he lives in Havana. He's an internationally famous actor, and he's the leading star in our opening night film.
He's probably for people who might not know, he's one of the most famous, well-known actors in Cuba, if not the preeminent actor, isn't he?
Yes. And he works all over the world in all different countries. He's doing another film in Spain right now, but it's really exciting to have him back with us, but especially exciting that the government issued a visa to Enrique Molina, who hasn't been with us for maybe 6 or 7 years, so we're thrilled.
So things are opening up now. Now, just so people know, the Havana Film Festival in New York is modeled after the world-famous Havana Film Festival, which takes place in Cuba every December, but a festival that, for all intents and purposes, the U.S. has been completely kind of not participating in it directly. How do things change? And maybe you can tell us how the festival itself here in New York came about, notwithstanding those restrictions that you just described.
Well, it originally started because two young people, one was a filmmaker and a professor at NYU, and the other was a young man working in the film industry. Who had done a research on Cuban cinema in Havana. They both got excited about it brought it to our attention, that is the American Friends of the Ludwig Foundation of Cuba, and we launched it because we were 501c3 and we could do that very easily under a nonprofit status. And the festival just grew and grew and grew, and today we're 10 years old. And I will say that we've kept a quiet profile. As you know, the American Friends of the Ludwig Foundation of Cuba does cultural exchange and interchange with Cuba. My partner there, Helmo Hernandez, at the Ludwig Foundation of Cuba, has right now a class from NYU doing a winter semester there. And they'll be there for another few weeks. That's been very, very successful. There are five universities still functioning, having semester courses.
Well, I want to get, because we're quickly running out of time, I want to get back to William Leo Grand we wrap up the segment, which is where do we go from here? What do you see happening next in terms of U.S. policy and perhaps kind of giving us a preview of what the Cuban government might respond, how they might respond to this?
Well, I think there are two big issues pending. One is travel for all Americans. There is legislation working its way through Congress that would lift the travel ban completely and allow anyone in the United States to travel to Cuba. I think that it makes sense to do that simply because if Cuban Americans are allowed to travel, why shouldn't every American be allowed to travel? If we think that Cuban Americans interacting with Cubans is a positive way to open Cuban society, why isn't interaction with any American of benefit as well? The second set of issues are really state-to-state issues. We've got a lot of issues with Cuba that it would be in the best interest of both countries to talk about. Migration, environmental safeguards, particularly as the Cubans begin to drill for oil offshore. issues of counter-narcotics and counter-terrorism. The Cubans have indicated in the past a willingness to talk with us about those issues. The president said during the campaign that he was willing to talk with Cuba, and so I expect that at some level, perhaps initially it'll be quiet diplomatic contacts among mid-level diplomats, but I expect that that's going to go forward. The Cubans have indicated a willingness to try to close the gap, if you will, in their differences with the United States. We'll just have to see as this process unfolds just how forthcoming they're willing to be.
Okay, well, Dr. William Leo Grand, we'll leave it at that. William Leo Grand is the Dean of the School of Public Affairs at American University. We also want to thank Carol Rosenberg, the founder and executive director of the Havana Film Festival in New York, celebrating its 10th year, kicking off this week. And you can get check them out. A link to the film festival is on our website at wnyc.org. I'm Mario Murillo. Stay with us.